What's up, Cub fans? Welcome to episode 103 of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Ryan Davis, your host, and with me again is Sean Sears. And there was no Cubs game yesterday, but they're playing the beginning of the final series of the first half, starting tonight against the San Diego Padres. We'll talk a little bit about the pitching matchup for tonight, and then we'll get into a little bit of a clarification on something that I said yesterday. Maybe talk a little trade targets, and then we'll wrap up with our usual what happened in the NL Central. So let's start. How are you doing, Sean?
I'm doing good. I'm happy baseball's back. I was actually a little bored yesterday, which is surprising since I've been moving so much. I actually had some free time, and I was like, you know, it would have been nice for a baseball game today, but of course, here we are.
I do the same thing where I'm just like, oh man, I'm so glad for an off day because I need to like focus on doing other stuff. And then I'm just kind of like chilling, trying to find something to do. I'm like, man, it would have been really nice to have baseball, but whatever. The Cubs do play tonight. It's another late one. It's against the Padres at 9:10 p.m. Central Time. We're getting the last of the Tyler Chatwood experience before the All-Star break, and maybe the second to last start for a while if he can't like actually turn things around. Chatwood went 120 pitches to get through 5 2/3 innings last time out, and he has allowed 7 earned runs in each of his last 2 starts. On the other side, the Cubs will be facing their old friend Clayton Richard, who has a 4.50 ERA on the season for the Padres, but has allowed 12 earned runs in 18 innings over his last 3 games. So, real quick thoughts on tonight's matchup.
Two really not fun pitchers going on the mound trying to be fun. so we'll see what happens. Like you said, Tyler Chatwood, this is kind of like his last moment to kind of give the Cubs an idea that he can pull it together because he hasn't been able to. And I think if he has another game like he's had the last couple outings, this will probably be his last game for a little while. So unless the Cubs absolutely need a spot starter or something. Interestingly enough, even the Cubs have won their last 2 games against San Diego. They won their last series with them last time in April, but they haven't seen him since. So first time they run up against them, I think, this year, right?
Yes, it is. They've got this is the interesting stat that I wanted to bring up on Richard. Okay. He actually, I think a lot of Cubs fans think of him as a guy who bounces between the minors and the big leagues or the bullpen and the rotation. But he actually made 32 starts for the Padres last year and tossed 197 innings, which I think is a little bit surprising considering I don't know if any Cubs pitchers threw that many innings last year. But the really interesting thing last year and then again this year, he has led the major leagues in hits allowed.
Oh,
yeah. So
that's interesting.
The total is 350 hits allowed in 315 innings over the last 2 years.
I'm sure he's just getting babbled to death here. But honestly, that doesn't surprise me that much. Clayton Richard doesn't necessarily have elite stuff. And I've never really been a guy that's thought he has great location either. So, I mean, he pretty much just gets on basically being just a reliable, dependable guy that you can put at the end of your rotation. And no, you're getting probably 180 to 200 innings from him. So,
yeah, I mean, it's especially surprising considering the way the league is trending now and the pitches in San Diego where it's hard enough to hit home runs as it is. And, yeah, I mean, it just seems like giving up hits is something that would be weird for him. I'm pulling up his home away splits. At home, he has a 3.86 ERA this year, so he's obviously better in his home park. And on the road, it's 5.04. So, but the hits allowed are pretty much the same rate. So he strikes out way more at home too. So I guess it's worth pointing out that Richard pitches well at Petco Park.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, I can't imagine too many pitchers doing terribly in Petco Park just because it is such a pitcher's ballpark. I guess if there was a place to give up a lot of hits, I guess in San Diego wouldn't be necessarily the worst place, but I think it's hard to justify no matter what giving up hits. So I don't know. Take a look here right now. His BABIP is 284, which is down from 351 from last year. Still striking out below 7 per 9 innings. Nothing fantastic. He's getting a crazy amount of ground balls, though. He's always hovering around 60%. That's where he lives. So if he's getting the ball on the ground, that's great. Even if he puts it in the air, Petco Park has plenty of space to, you know, have guys track it down. So he fits kind of the mold, but, you know, at the same time, he's nothing that special, at least. But
yeah, and, you know, it's something to watch out for. He's good in his home park. He strikes out, I think it was 7.5 per nine in Petco Park, where it's like six otherwise. So
that's a good increase, honestly.
Yeah, Chatwood, he's pitching in San Diego as well. let's see how that works out for him, because this Padres team is very poor offensively. They don't like to score a ton of runs. If I'm remembering correctly, I believe they are last in the National League, maybe last in baseball. What do you think of this performance for him? Is this a chance to build confidence going into the All-Star break, or are we too far gone?
I would think the Cubs, knowing the money and the commitment they made to him, are probably going to stick with him. Not necessarily maybe just ride him out of the rotation the rest of the year, but I would think the Cubs would probably give him an opportunity throughout the season, even if they take him out of the rotation, just because they did commit, maybe not necessarily the money, but, you know, Chatwood being good makes his rotation a lot better, clearly. So I think honestly, they'll probably give him another chance. But if Chatwood implodes tonight, like he has the last couple nights, it's really, really tough to throw him out there and not, you know, have a game plan for, you know, maybe we let him throw for two innings and see how it goes and evaluate. I don't know, you know, but yeah. I don't think you can give him much more, you know, slack on the leash at this point with just how poor he's been so far.
It was worth pointing out here, the Padres now are 14th in the National League in runs scored, but they are last in, let's see, I can pull up all the categories they're last in. Stolen bases, walks, they are last. No, I'm sorry, they're not last in stolen bases. That was they're last in caught stealings, which is, I guess, pretty bad. 55 stolen bases, 25 caught stealing. That's pretty bad.
Brutal.
Yeah. Last in walks, which is great for Chatwood. They're last in strikeouts, 13th in batting average, last in on base, last in slugging, last in OPS.
I mean, if there ever were a rebound team for Tyler Chatwood, this seems like the San Diego Padres, right? Like, if he can't do it against these guys, this dude, it's going to be tough to have any type of confidence in him going forward.
Yeah, I'm checking now their lineup. The highest OPS in their lineup belongs to Christian Villanueva at 754.
Hey, go Cubs.
Yeah, and I'm sure I could pull up his splits. He had that really hot start.
Yeah, that three home run game and all that.
Yeah, and it's been not good since. So even like their quote unquote best hitter by the measure of OPS, you know, I'll say the stat in a minute. I'm pulling up his since the start of May, he has a 600 flat OPS.
Ew.
So yeah, let's take the Cubs in this one.
Yeah, this should be a rebound game for Chatwood. If it's not, then, you know, I think it's time to make some changes.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, let's talk about Brandon Morrow for a second, because someone in a very nice way kind of called me out on Twitter on what I said yesterday, and I don't feel like they're wrong, and I don't feel like I'm wrong. I feel like we just have two different opinions that can't be proven, or really, I think, two opinions that I think are leaning different ways. The point was, I said on Morrow that I don't like that they can't use him when they need him. It's always like kind of scheduled with him. Can't go 3 days in a row. Can't go more than one inning. It was pointed out that even though I'm frustrated about this, this is something that they were honest about and stressed from the start, from the signing. And I agree with that. And yeah. I know that happened, but, you know, for my money, you know, I would prefer a reliever that can come in just about any situation. Obviously you're not going to pitch his arm off, but I would like to, if you're paying that money for a closer, to be able to bring him in those situations. And here's an example. It hasn't happened a ton this year, but here's one example. He pitched on July 7th and 8th and could not pitch on July 9th. Now, July 7th and 8th, he combined to throw 29 pitches. So couldn't pitch on July 9th, which I understand. And that was the game in San Francisco where they had to, you know, they brought in Steve Cishek and then he had the bases loaded with one out, and then they brought in Pedro Strop and he gave up the single. I'm not saying necessarily the Cubs win that game if you bring in Morrow, but if you're able to bring in Morrow instead of Strop, you do it. So that's an example of what frustrates me about this is, yeah, I'm sure that this way they're treating him is going to make him better for it in the postseason, you know, should they win the division and get there, which at this point isn't like set in stone, but it still seems likely. My thing is how they get there, whether they're able to, you know, win 92 games or 95 games. I feel like there's going to be a lot of teams bunched in the same area, and some of that might make a difference. So it's frustrating to me to see Morrow not be able to go out when they need him. It's always kind of scheduled.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, what happens in the postseason? I get, you know, you want to limit these guys, but do you like open up things a little bit more to become more flexible in these moments? Because, I mean, if the Cubs need Brandon Morrow in a game where it's a one-run game and, you know, maybe it's the middle of the eighth, you need that guy to be there. You need your best pitcher to be able to go out there and do, you know, whatever it is you need them to do, clearly strike out in those situations, those guys. But to not have that confidence in him, or maybe not confidence, but not being able to be limiting moral like that is detrimental to those Cubs bullpen. Because you look at the rest of these guys and, you know, some of these guys could probably fill into that role and they can maybe do that for like a game or two, like the Strops and CJ Wilson's, or CJ Edwards and CJ Wilson's, geez. Too many CJs and Wilson's. Justin Wilson, you know, those guys that have stepped in beforehand, the Steve Cheezicks, they can do it, but they're not the type of guy Brandon Morrow is. They're not the shutdown, lockdown guy that he's supposed to be. So,
and it has been, and it has been when he's out there.
Exactly. So there's no one on this bullpen right now that I'm really like 100% confident to step in for Morrow. That's honestly, it's probably why they'll make a move potentially at the deadline to find someone that can maybe not necessarily be a closer, but could maybe supplement Morrow on days he can't go. Cause right now I think the Cubs thought last year, Justin Wilson could be that guy. And yeah, you know, he's had a better season, but he's not reliable in almost any sense of the word, I would say right now. Pedro Strop is one of the most reliable guys we have in the bullpen, but I don't know if he's necessarily a closer type of guy. And CJ Wilson, or CJ Edwards, God, I really want CJ Wilson on the Cubs apparently. CJ Edwards.
There's your lefty that we need.
Yeah, right. Could be that guy, but there's moments where he looks incredible, like he did a couple nights ago against the Giants, and then there's other times where that curveball doesn't hit the zone, his fastball's not locating, and all of a sudden he's walking guys again. So I don't know. I mean, I agree with you. I understood what the person was trying to say on Twitter, and he did it, like you said, very politely and was, you know, trying to have a conversation, which we always appreciate.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just kind of like, I know they said this was going to happen, but it just seems like a lot of money to commit to a guy you can't always rely on from day to day.
Yeah. And I do get the point of, you know, maybe that this doing it this way is better for the postseason, but I'm not a huge believer in giving a guy a ton of money for only the postseason, if that makes sense. Like if you're giving him a bunch of money, and I know it was way less than Wade Davis, right, and that's kind of a big deal, but if you're giving him this money, I would hope that over the 162 game season you can also rely on him to be the guy who earns that money, the guy who pitches in that role. But that's, yeah, I said it yesterday and I said it in the conversation on Twitter. I know I'm nitpicking here. I know that this is, Morrow has been great and the Cubs have been very good in the first half, despite some of what we've seen and the fact that the Brewers sit one game ahead of them. This has been one of the best first halves the Cubs have had in the last like decade or, you know, whatever, since the turn of the century. So there's little to complain about here. It's really just kind of a personal preference. When I see it's a, you know, a one run game or a two run game on the road, and or it's a tie game in extra innings, my thought is always back to that Buck Showalter thing. I want the best pitcher on the mound to continue the game rather than Luke Farrell with Brandon Morrow sitting in the bullpen because maybe he won't pitch today.
Yeah. Nothing makes me more frustrated for, like, you know, bullpen usage when we have a guy that clearly doesn't fit the situation coming into the situation to save the guy either for the save situation or get him that stat or to like save him for another game. It's like, well, yeah, you need to win this game. This game is important. You're in a pennant race right now, like, or I guess a division race here. Like, it's important to pick these games up when he can, particularly against the Brewers that just continue to keep pace with the Cubs. So I get it. I get there's a game plan. You want to stick to the game plan. I can appreciate that, but I still am a little frustrated along with you.
Yeah, well, let's wrap on that point there. We'll go to our second segment, and we'll talk a little bit about some possible trade deadline ideas. So there is a player that the Cubs signed way back, I think, in April, that is a familiar name to a lot of Cub fans, and that's Chris Coughlin. And he kind of disappeared for a while, and then all of a sudden he was at extended spring training, and then all of a sudden he's in AAA Iowa. Yesterday he let off for the Cubs, the Iowa Cubs, and went 3-for-5, and I'm trying to see here, with a home run. So 3-for-5 with a homer. He's been hitting better lately for the Iowa Cubs. Now, obviously, I'm not thinking that Chris Coughlin is some sort of savior, but I find it interesting that he's starting to perform. And, you know, I just think there's a lot of rumors that the Cubs are trying to make big offers on guys like DeGrom, who I still don't think is on his way.
Right.
But they're out there shopping major league pieces, which I think, you know, automatically means that Ian Happ is being discussed. This is a guy that could come in and be a bench bat, I think, and maybe they're kind of hoping that he will. What do you think of Coughlin and what the Cubs could be doing? Not that they're relying on him, but just like seeing him, you know, start to perform might be putting those thoughts in their heads.
Yeah, I mean, before he got brought up to AAA, he was slashing like 345. He was OPSing over 1,000 for like the rookie, or was it A ball or rookie ball for the Cubs? He had like 8 games. He came back for AAA and he struggled a bit. Like you said, now he's pulling it together. His last couple games, he's been hitting well. I mean, he's a versatile guy. He just does anything you need him to. And for a lefty bat that can come off the bench and then play second base, or can play the outfield if he, you know, should play the outfield, probably shouldn't play second base, but can. You know, he's just versatile. He's exactly what you need in a postseason bat, where you just might need a guy to come step up and maybe run the bases, or, you know, just fill in for the outfield for a bit, or, you know, do those little things. And he's great at that. And he's a great clubhouse guy. So, I mean, I think he's a great trade sweetener. Clearly, we're not talking about a big package built around Chris Coughlin. He's not going to bring home any type of pitching that you're looking for alone. But yeah, adding him with Ian Happ and maybe a prospect or two is smart. I think that Miguel Amaya just got listed as a potential trade piece that's going to the futures game for the Cubs by I think it was Ken Rosenthal or someone from The Athletic posted that yesterday or today or something like that. That I mean, those three pieces together, that probably gets you something good. I mean, that could get you a decent, reliable pitcher or reliever.
Yeah, see, my thought was that Coughlin could be the guy who comes up and fills that roster spot. If a guy like Ian Happ goes.
See, that's not a bad idea either. That probably makes more sense, honestly. Filling that spot there. Cause, I mean, honestly, Ian Happ is great, but, you know, right now, clearly, Alvaro Mora should be the guy that's getting the majority of these at-bats in center field. And if Ian Happ's going to get you, you know, whoever it may be, I would hope it's a starter if you're trading Ian Happ. Chris Coughlin, you could do way worse than Chris Coughlin coming in and doing, you know, whatever he needs to do. The lefty bat, you don't lose. He can play the infield, outfield, like I was saying. His versatility is huge, and clearly Joe Madden loves the guy. So
yeah, and his stats with the Cubs have been great. Now, obviously, he was really terrible with Oakland at the start of 2016. He was bad with the Blue Jays last year. But in 2014 with the Cubs in a pretty much full-time role, 804 OPS, 122 OPS plus. 2015, 784 OPS, 115 OPS plus. Even after they acquired him in 2016, back from the A's in his kind of part-time role down the stretch. He only had 128 plate appearances, but he had a 391 on-base percentage, a 779 slugging, or I'm sorry, 779 OPS and a 109 OPS plus in kind of a part-time role. This is a guy who is, I think, 33 years old.
That's correct, yeah.
33 years old. It's not like he's, you know, beyond baseball prime, or he can't continue doing this stuff. So I would think it'd be really interesting if the Cubs do make a move, adding Coughlin to the 25-man roster and seeing, do we have a solid lefty bench bat to go alongside Tommy La Stella? Is Tommy La Stella maybe a guy who could get moved off the roster because he's obviously a great hitter who deserves a more full-time role somewhere. Coughlin can play infield, although not, you know, quite as well as Stella, but you know, he started at first base last night. So yeah, there's a lot of interesting conversations I think you could have around the kind of role Chris Coughlin could have if this is for real, if he is starting to come around at AAA.
Right. And plus, I don't think any Cub fan can forget his surprise 16 home runs in 2015. So I'm sure the fans will at least welcome him warm arms, at least to start. Hopefully, if he ends up batting like 219 like he did last year, yeah, clearly there's gonna be some problems. But you know, that being said, I mean, Ian Happ wasn't doing much better until about a month ago. So, you know, you take him where you can, I guess.
And for some reason, I always identify Chris Coughlin with the losing Cubs. I don't know why that is. Like the first 3 years of Theo Epstein, I know he arrived in 2014, so he arrived at the end of that. But he played pretty much a whole season in 2015 with that great team, and then he played half a season with the Cubs in 2016 and won the World Series with them. So I don't know why I associate him with with the bad Cubs. It looks like he was fourth on the team in home runs in 2015, mm-hmm. which is a little surprisingly behind Fowler, Bryant, Rizzo. So yeah, this is a guy who has some serious significance to Cubs history, recent Cubs history, that could be a factor. Going into maybe some trade deadline ideas, I don't think that we're going to sit here and banter about Machado and DeGrom and why they, you know, are definitely trading for those guys. But
why not, Ryan?
Let's not get into that. But sensible trade ideas that fit this team. Do you have any guys that come to mind?
I mean, I'm always going to say I love the idea of Zach Britton. I don't know if that's necessarily a trade the Cubs want to make or would make. You know, the Orioles front office might be one of the most difficult ones outside of maybe the Rays to make a deal with at this point right now. I feel like those two teams are always linked to the Cubs in some way or another, whether it's real or not, just because they make sense in parts. But, I mean, someone in the mold of Zach Britton would be someone I'd be very interested in. I really like the idea of Kelvin Herrera. From the Royals, but of course he got traded, you know, early June, I think, right, even before trade talk even really started. So I think you need a lefty reliever. Tony Watson was a guy that I thought was a really good pickup last year for the Dodgers. I don't think he's not available right now at this point, but someone in the mold of that is someone that I think they should go after. No one's really jumping at me in the top of my head right now, but there's some people out there, I'm sure, that make a lot of sense in that role. I think that's what they really need. Beyond that, I think starters wise, if everyone's healthy, you have realistically like 5 to 6, maybe even 7 options at starter right now on the major league roster, or at least have been up and down. So I don't know if there's anyone you absolutely need to go and attack. But I think a lefty reliever in the bullpen is what I think most people would agree on at this point.
Yeah. And if you look at Britton's stats, they're not impressive in any way. He didn't make his debut this season until June 12th. And I know you kind of talked about someone in his mold, but I feel like that is the one name that comes to mind for me that, you know, should be available and really could help the Cubs. Mm-hmm. He's got a 4.26 ERA in 12 and two-thirds innings, 10 hits allowed, 7 walks, 11 strikeouts. But if you look at his last 5 games, he has 5 innings pitched, 2 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 4 strikeouts. And his last 2 games were pitching 1-run victories over the New York Yankees in the 9th inning. One was a save in which he went 1 inning, 1 hit allowed, 1 strikeout. And one was, a tie game where he pitched the 9th and got the win. 1 inning, 1 hit, 2 strikeouts. So this is obviously he's starting to come around, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, the guy was one of the best pitchers in the planet in 2015 and 16. Like, he was elite 100%. And he's a guy that, you know, I know he's older and, you know, relievers sometimes have a short shelf life, but I mean, this guy's great and he's talented and he's a guy I think the Cubs would love to add. And I think have been seriously interested in a while. It's just, you know, do they want to pay the asking price that the Orioles, Peter Angelos, is going to need to get something approved from the front office. So I'm not totally sold on it, but you know, I would love to see it. Another name I think that would be interesting, not a lefty, but Blake Treinen, I'm trying to say his name from the Athletics, the dude that's on fire.
Treinen.
Trinan, thank you. He's been fantastic. I think he might be probably one of the hottest relievers probably on the market if the Athletics do decide to make a move. He is 30, but the Athletics, honestly, I don't think are that far away from competing.
Yeah.
So I could see them wanting to hold on to him, but their bullpen is good. They've got plenty of guys in here. Yosmero Petit, I think, was a really underrated pickup. Emilio Pagan hasn't had the season I think he was expecting, but he's still an interesting guy. There's some guys on the Athletics team that if they were trying to trade, and clearly the Cubs have a little bit of a relationship there with Billy Bean, they could make sense potentially. I don't know what they would want back, probably younger pieces or maybe a piece to contribute in the next year or two.
Yeah, I don't know if the A's are going to be trading just because the optics, really. I mean, it looks terrible. For anyone who doesn't know, I mean, I'm sure most baseball fans listening to this podcast realize that the A's are better this year. But if you put the A's in the NL Central, they would be one game behind the Cubs.
Exactly, yeah.
So, but because of where they sit, they would be in first place in the NL West. They would be in first place in the NL East. They'd be in first place in the AL Central. But they're 8 games behind the Astros in the AL West, and they are five games behind the Mariners in the wild card. So they're just in a bad spot. They're the team that gets screwed by divisional placement this year.
Yeah, which is a bummer. Talk about the Mariners for a sec. Gosh, those guys have just been on fire. Lost Robinson Cano and then ended up winning like 15 to their 20 games or something like that. Just crazy tear. But yeah, I don't know. What about you? Is there a guy out there that you're really kind of looking at outside of maybe Zach Britton as a piece?
I wrote a piece for Bet Chicago on James Shields, and I think I talked about it a little bit on this podcast. I still think it makes sense for the Cubs because he's a guy who gets you innings, and that's really what they need. He's not great. He's been better over his last, let's say, 12 games or so. He's been much better for the White Sox. He wouldn't cost a lot either financially or in prospect cost. He's I think got around five million left this year that the White Sox are paying. The Padres are paying a ton of his money. So the Cubs would have to take on about $5 million this year and I think $2 million next year in a buyout for James Shields. I know the people think of James Shields and they think of how gross he's been over the last 2 years, and he just had a start recently where he allowed like a ton of earned runs, so his, you know, some of his stuff is kind of ballooned, but that his recent start, he went 5 2/3, 10 hits, 8 earned runs. I'm not making a good case for this guy, but he threw 99 pitches in that game to go 5 2/3. This is a guy who gets you through the game pretty much every single time. He gets you through the at least 5 or 6 innings, and he's reliable. Let's see, looking at June, 7 innings, 6 innings, 7 innings, 6 innings, 4 2/3, 7 innings, then 6 2/3 going into July. So he's been reliable to get you through a lot of innings and really save the bullpen. And I think that's what the Cubs need in a starter if they trade for one.
Yeah, honestly, I don't hate the James Shields idea. I mean, he's a guy that no matter what's going on in the game, he's always battling and competing. And I can really appreciate that of a pitcher, particularly a guy that's just been struggling as much as he has. And even just like been very open about it, acknowledging, yeah, I know I've like sucked. Like I know I've been bad sometimes this last couple of years, but I know who I am. I don't need to prove myself at this point. Like I just know what I need to be successful. And I think that type of mindset is huge, especially for a guy like Shields, who's a little bit prone to starting out games, giving up a couple runs, but then kind of barreling down and finding a way to navigate through 5 or 6 innings. And like you said, I mean, just back-to-back outings before this most recent one where it was like 5, 6, or 7 innings pretty much throughout. And that's honestly not something the Cubs can really get out of all their starters. So if James Shields can provide that while also giving up maybe 4 runs a game, I mean, that's better than what Tyler Chatwood's doing, and you know James Shields going to get some definite rest for the bullpen, and that's a huge thing right now. Like we just talked about this last episode, this bullpen is going to get overtaxed heavily if we keep using the way we are right now, or we, I say, the Cubs.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a bad idea, especially he's cheap. He's not going to cost much. Of course, you'll have to take that $5 million, but that'll probably mean you have to give up not much back on the prospect end or whoever the player is that they trade for. But yeah, adding James Shields to this team is not a bad insurance plan. I agree with you.
Yeah, I'm sure Jerry Reinsdorf would just be all about unloading the $5 million.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
I pulled it up from May 1st through now. He's made 14 starts, 90 innings. So if you divide that out, that's an average of 6.4 innings per start. And then he has a 4 ERA, and that's including his, you know, game where he gave up 8 earned runs recently. So it's a guy who gives you innings, and it's not like they're blowing out his arm to do it. He's the most pitches he's thrown in any of these games is 106. So that's my idea. I feel like it makes a ton of sense, especially if you're going for a fifth starter so you can dump Chatwood off somewhere in, you know, the DL or the bullpen or whatever. Maybe keep Montgomery in the rotation for now, and then maybe move him to the pen when Yu Darvish eventually comes back. It gives the Cubs a lot of depth.
Yeah, that's true. And you can never have too much pitching, and clearly the Cubs need to add a few more arms just to give themselves that cushion in case they do have another injury or they do have another guy struggling. So I like the deal. I think people would probably chastise it, but I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, that's what I think would happen. People would be really stupid about it and would throw their fit because it's James Shields and because what they've seen from him, and he's just not impressive.
Essentially, what I would call the Jay Cutler of Chicago baseball, I would say, for a little bit. Maybe not. Jay Cutler might have, that might be a slight to Jay Cutler. He was a little bit better than I think James Shields has been for the White Sox, but I think he's just like an easy target. You know, he's just like, it's easy to pick on him.
Right. All right, I think that's good. Unless you have any other specific names you want to discuss, I think we could go to our final segment.
Now let's move on.
So the only two teams in action for the NL Central yesterday were the Brewers and the Pirates. They played each other, and the Pirates took care of business. They beat Milwaukee 6-3 behind a strong performance from Jameson Taillon. He had 10 strikeouts in 6 innings. So the standings are this. The Cubs enter play just one game back of Milwaukee. The Brewers are 55-39, while the Cubs are 52-38. Cardinals are 47-44, 6.5 back. The Pirates are 44-49 and 10.5 back. And the Reds are 13.5 back at 41-52. So any final thoughts going into the last series before the All-Star break?
That was huge for the Pirates to steal a game here from the Brewers. I don't necessarily expect him to take any more games, honestly. That was an excellent performance there from Taillon. I didn't know he struck out 10. I watched a little bit of the game yesterday, the third and fourth inning. He looked solid, but yeah, that's huge. Pirates steal a game here from the Brewers. If the Cubs can, I mean, I would think the Cubs should probably take 2 or 3 at least from the Padres, barring any insanely terrible offensive performance or whatnot. I know Joe Maddon was all over their bats yesterday, and this series against the Giants, you know, a little bit different offensive output than we've seen the last couple of games. But yeah, I mean, the Padres are probably one of the preferred teams I'd like the Cubs to see to finish out the first round or first half of the season. It's just a bummer that the Brewers are also facing the Pirates, which will probably mean they'll win the majority of their games the rest of this first half as well. So just kind of keep pace and hold where you're at and, you know, make the push in the second half is what my thought would be here.
Yeah, and we gave those stats in the Padres and their offense earlier, so we don't need to rehash that. But this is a team that was, I think, at one point 34-38, so only 4 games under 500, and you know, kind of keeping pace in the division. And now they're 40-56. So do the math; that's like 4-18 in the last 22 games. Not good.
It's crazy. The NL West to start the season looked way different than it does now. I mean, the Dodgers look like they were like almost 10 games out of first place at one point, and now they're, you know, a half game lead over the Diamondbacks. Just a weird division.
Yeah. And I did the math wrong. It was 6-18 in their last 24.
So. Still bad. Bad either way. Not good.
That's the point. Not good. All right. Thanks again for listening. This has been episode 103 of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Easy for me to say. Thank you again for joining me, Sean. I appreciate it. It's been really cool having you on these podcasts, helping out a little bit more frequently. It makes my job a bit easier.
Yeah, of course, man. It's always fun talking Cubs. I don't mind getting up in the morning and talking with you and then sharing with everyone else. And feel free to tell us what you think on Twitter or iTunes or wherever you find the podcast. We're always happy to have conversations in dialect. Just don't be jerks.
Yeah, that's all I ask. Just be respectful and add to the conversation. We're happy to take interesting points that you make and bring it to the podcast.